Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramay.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. I'm your host, Mark Daly, and it is Thursday, November 12th, 2020. Well, technically for a couple more hours. We're one of the last time zones, obviously, here on the west coast of North America. And, well, as I sit here, we're only about three hours and 45 minutes away from FP1 at the Intercity Istanbul Park, which is the host of this weekend's Turkish Grand Prix. And really looking forward to seeing this one back for this year. Of course, it's been almost a decade since the last time we raced in Turkey. 2011 was the last Turkish Grand Prix, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. Obviously, I've already mentioned it twice in this opening monologue, and we're barely even a minute into the show. But that being said, it is, I have to admit that I'm having a little bit of, what do you want to call it? Foreboding, gloominess. I guess you could say that something like that, at any rate. It's my sort of typical mood that I get to at this time of year when I look at the calendar and realize that the end of the season is just around the corner. And I've really become used to these double and triple header weekends that we've had so many of this year. And this past weekend, not having a Grand Prix to look forward to, I mean, I had plenty of other things to do, to enjoy and keep myself occupied. But it certainly felt funny that there wasn't a Formula One race this past weekend. And we've had plenty of weekends off ever since we got going, somewhat delayed back at the start of July, but still it felt a little bit odd, but glad that we still have several races to go. We're slowly ticking them off the list as we get towards the season finale in Abu Dhabi in just about a month from now. And it is kind of funny though, the way that Formula One is. It seems that the season seems to last like a very, very long time, which of course it does. It starts in the middle of March, goes to the end of November in a normal year. And then it seems that once you get into the beginning of December, you know, you get towards the holiday season, you're kind of distracted with other things. And then you kind of realize that you have this window of about 3 months of no Formula One racing. But it seems like once you get past New Year's and you hit some of those milestones in, you know, after New Year's Day, like President's Day and whatnot, and you realize that once you get to the middle of February, that you're coming up on winter testing in Barcelona. And then that's when, for me, you know, you really kind of get that real feeling, that sense again, that once you get to Barcelona for that, for the tests, that the first Grand Prix is just really around the corner. And we're going to talk all about that because the provisional calendar was released a couple of days ago. They're talking about trying to get some fans, well, a lot of fans into to see the Australian Grand Prix in March 2021, and well, cross fingers and let's hope that is actually possible. But there is a lot to talk about this week, and I'm really looking forward to going over some of these stories. And we're going to start first with the man of the hour, who is usually the man of the hour each and every week, month, year, and of course that is six-time world champion Lewis Hamilton, who has been a little bit frank and opened up a little bit this past week just about some of the delays and the fact that there hasn't been very much discussions between himself and Mercedes about getting a new deal done. And, you know, this was just further, I think, exaggerated, or a light was really shone upon it in the past couple of weeks when Lewis said that he felt that there was no guarantee that he will be in Formula One next year. And of course, when you have a driver with the stature, the presence that Lewis Hamilton has. I mean, six-time world champion, obviously, I mean, he's one of the best drivers of all time, obviously the best driver of this generation. For him to say that there's no guarantee that he's going to be in Formula One next year, regardless if that's going to be a thing or not. I mean, just the fact that that comes out of Lewis's own mouth, those are his own words. Of course, people are going to talk about that. And of course, people are going to sit up and take notice, because for Lewis to walk away would make such a huge gap. It would leave such a huge gap in the sport. And obviously, that would be something that would really put Mercedes into a bit of a bind. Anyways, Lewis, he did talk a little bit about it further this week, and he had to say, quote, "I believe I have the best contract that there is in terms of how it is structures and in terms of time management. With the team that's put around me, I think it's been great. But I'm always looking to see how we can improve. How can I be more efficient and do more for the partners? How can I position myself to do more for the team? Naturally, I think it's easy to go and sign that deal and continue not having to think of what's afterwards. And I'm very conscious of the idea that I do want to continue with Mercedes, and I would love to help them on this quest in pushing for change. They're taking their cars green and electrifying more, and I want to help them with that on the road. I would like them to help them in terms of pushing for diversity, because there's also that within the organization and with every organization out there. There's not enough of it, so there's a lot to discuss, a lot to go through." Anyways, Lewis did have to go on and just elaborate a little bit more on the comments that he made just recently. And he said, quote, or he did have to say, he was specifically referring to the contract situation, quote, "I think it's something we'll do. If not after the job is done, then particularly at the end of the year. But nothing is set in stone. I think it's just about talking about it. And at the moment, I don't feel like I'm finished. I think there's always areas to improve. I love racing. I love the challenge. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon," end quote. And, well, I think one of the things that he's talking about there, he says, if not after the job is done, is what he's talking about. Obviously, one of the jobs that Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton have wrapped up so far, along with Valtteri Bottas, of course, is the Constructors' World Championship. They wrapped that up a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, that was just going to be a foregone conclusion after they really raced off into the distance and racked up all the points that they had. I mean, they've had no clear competitor often enough this year. I mean, we've seen a couple other race winners here and there, but obviously not too many. I mean, it's either been mostly Lewis and occasionally, you know, Bottas is always good for a win or two every season. But the other job that is still that he needs to get done, of course, is winning the Drivers' World Championship, which, you know, he could wrap up this weekend, and it's going to happen. I mean, it's not a question of if, it's been basically a question of when. If you want to look at it or take my two cents for what it's worth, I think that he's basically had the championship, or was his championship to lose since about Hungary, when Bottas, he had a couple of bad races in there, and that the gap at the front of the world championship really opened up at that point. And Lewis has just extended it more and more ever since. And well, if you look at where the driver's championship is right now, it really is it's a huge gulf. I mean, Lewis right now, 282 points, Valtteri on 197. I mean, there's more of a chance that Max will catch and pass Valtteri Bottas for runner-up in the world championship than there is a likely chance that Valtteri will catch up and pass Lewis Hamilton in the remaining amount of races that we have before we close out the season. I mean, it's almost 100 points. And I mean, there's like, what, 35 between Max and Valtteri. I mean, that's more of a situation to watch, because, I mean, Max could have a couple of good races. What if the unlikely situation or thing happens that Valtteri hits some mechanical issues, or, you know, he doesn't finish a couple of races? That runners up position could be very much under threat. But Lewis, I mean, he's been de facto world champion for months now. And once you get into the realm of, well, if this happens and if that happens and you get some bizarre things, situations happen, then of course, mathematically, Valtteri Bottas still has an opportunity to win the world championship. Practically and realistically speaking, it's not going to happen. But, you know, Lewis being the pro that he is, he's always focused on the job at hand. And I mean, they talked about it, reminisced about it not so long ago, both Lewis and Toto Wolff, when they talked about the last time they got the deal done. They said they sat down, they got it worked out in about 10 hours over the course of a day, and then they ordered pizza at the end. I mean, it seems almost insane to think you have a sportsman like Lewis Hamilton at the top of his game in the premier racing series on the globe, racing for one of the best teams in the world in Mercedes. And it sounds so casual. Oh yeah, we just sort of hashed it out over the course of the day, and we ordered Pizza Hut at the end of the day. Of course, I'm kind of simplifying, but it seems very un-Formula One. But I mean, the point is that with everything that's been said and everything that, both from, speculated on by fans and media and Lewis, of course, throwing out that no guarantee quote that he'd be in Formula One next year. Of course, that's created a lot of discussion. But if you just look at recent history, that as long as Lewis is there and he wants to race and the team wants to have him there. And of course, why wouldn't you? I mean, Lewis still on the top of his game, still the best driver in Formula One. Mercedes has the money to do it, and Lewis is entitled to a big payday. I mean, why not? I mean, look what his record is, and look what he's done for that team, and just the prestige that Mercedes has in Formula One. I mean, over this nearly past decade now, ever since 2014, okay, not quite a decade, but I mean, the unprecedented run of championships, both in the Constructors and Drivers World Championships that these guys have won, is absolutely amazing. So Lewis, big part of that, obviously, and he's entitled to a big payday. I mean, if he ties Michael Schumacher on 7 world championships this year, which, of course, like I said, is just a question of time and not if he's going to do it, then certainly, I mean, he's already in elite company as a 6-time world champion with all the records that this guy holds, that he's entitled to get paid for it. But anyways, like I say, I don't think it's a big red flag. I don't think it's a big warning sign that that these two haven't sat down yet and got the contract worked out, because, like I said, recent history proved otherwise. And I'm expecting that once they get everything sorted out, probably after the season, just judging from some of the things that that have been coming out, that's what I'm expecting. They're going to sit down. They're going to get this done. And we're going to see Lewis Hamilton back in Formula One for a couple of years. That's what I'm expecting. And who knows? The question for me is not if Lewis Hamilton is going to sign another contract with Mercedes, but is this going to be his last contract in Formula One? With Lewis being in his mid-30s now, he's basically wrapped up all the records there is to own in Formula One. I mean, there's very few records that he doesn't hold at this point in time. And he's clearly a guy that has other interests beyond the sport. And that's my big question, is how long is he going to stay in Formula One? He still says it's fun and still a challenge for him. But I have to wonder, after he signs maybe for a year, 2 years, whatever it is he going to want to sign beyond that? Because like I say, he's already what is he, 35 now, mid-30s for sure. So it's just a question of how long do you want to stay in and try and do more? When does it become too much? Anyways, moving along from that, Jenson Button, former world champion, he had to say that he believes that Formula One needs Lewis Hamilton to be paired with what he calls a more challenging teammate at Mercedes before he won't be winning any more world champion or championships. Well, yeah, we tried that before, and it wasn't all that long ago. But doesn't Jenson remember? And I'm saying this tongue in cheek, of course. I'm not being too sarcastic, but that he was paired obviously for a couple of years with Nico Rosberg, and that did not go very well. But the thing is, from Mercedes' point of view, Valtteri Bottas is the ideal teammate. He's going to score a lot of podiums. He's going to help them win a lot of front row lockouts. He's going to score some poles. He's going to win some races. He's going to help them win a lot of championships as well, and a lot of 1-2 finishes as well. But the thing is that Valtteri on his day, don't get me wrong, is quite capable of matching and beating Lewis Hamilton. There's some tracks where Valtteri is superior than Lewis Hamilton. But the thing is, over the course of basically a 20 to 22 race season, given whatever the year is, in normal years we're over 20 races. But over that in course of the entire year, Lewis is just that much better on so many more tracks. He's usually quicker in qualifying. I mean, like I say, Valtteri is good for nicking a pole here and there. He's good for winning a race here and there, but he's not going to be able to do it over the course of an entire season. I mean, we've seen it for the last two seasons in a row. Valtteri wins the first race of the year and kind of sets that expectation, maybe not the expectation, but the situation that, oh, well, Valtteri showed up to play this year. He's looking good. But of course, one race is one race. And I don't doubt for a moment, I'm not questioning the talent of or the speed of Valtteri Bottas. I think he's a very good racing driver, Formula One driver. But the thing is that Lewis at this point is just that much better. And of course, like Jensen says, that of course he needs to be paired with a more challenging teammate, because, you know, unless you're in one of those silver cars, the odds are that you're going to be challenging and pushing for a world championship at this point is not very likely. And we're probably going to see the same situation next year, because what with COVID and the new cars now delayed till 2022, that we basically have these development of these cars that's been pushed forward for 2-3 years, right? In a very simple sense, at any rate. So of course, you know, you can see the point that Jensen is making, that anybody that's going to challenge Lewis has to come internally. But I think that even though it would be good to see, you know, have him paired up with somebody similar to like Nico Rosberg, because Nico, not as good as Lewis Hamilton, but very capable of beating Lewis on a more consistent and regular basis than Bottas is. But, you know, if you flip that around, that situation around, and look at it from Mercedes' point of view, and this is nothing new. We've talked about this on this podcast now for years, right? Ever since 2016, when Nico Rosberg won his world championship and hung up his racing gloves and helmet at the end of the year and decided, that's it, guys, I won my world championship. I'm done. I'm out. And Bottas has been there ever since. But from Mercedes' point of view, like I say, I mean, he's going to help them win races. He's going to help them win championships. He's going to score lots of points by getting on the podiums and winning the occasional race himself here or there. But the thing is, he's not going to push Lewis. And I don't ever expect to see in the situation. And I don't doubt for a moment that Valtteri will race Lewis Hamilton hard if they came to wheel-to-wheel racing. I just could not foresee a situation where it would get as bad between Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas as it did with Nico Rosberg. But from Mercedes' point of view, they have no motivation to change that dynamic between them, because Lewis is going to keep winning. He's going to win championships, which is going to keep him happy. Valtteri is going to be there. He's going to help them win world championships on the constructor's side and still win a couple of races here or there each and every year and have the prestige of being a Mercedes driver. So in theory, he's happy, but I mean, of course, he wants to win a championship of his own, but he is the number two driver there. No matter what he does, I mean, unless Lewis walks away and they get in a driver that's, say, a younger driver, kind of, say all of a sudden Lewis decided to call it a day and you have Valtteri Bottas and he's partnered up with, say, let's take George Russell, because he's come through the Mercedes system. He was a reserve driver there last, 2 years ago before he was, taken on as a full-time driver as Williams. Let's just say now that Lewis is out of Formula One, you have a pairing of Bottas and George Russell. Obviously, in that pairing, Bottas is going to be the number one guy. But in the situation with Valtteri Bottas and Lewis Hamilton, well, you know what I'm saying. He's going to be the number two driver. Anyways, Jensen did have to say the following quote: "Comparing records is a tricky one. We all like a number, and we would like to beat a number, but it's really difficult to compare. All you can say is he's done the best job he can, and the team have done a fantastic job. They've not been beaten in the hybrid era, and Lewis has won all but one championship with them. I don't see that changing either. It's going to continue until he stops or until he gets a teammate that can actually challenge him. He's definitely learned from his teammates, and he's definitely a more rounded driver than when we were teammates. But if we had a teammate like Max Verstappen, we would see a different driver from Lewis. He needs that to have that challenge. Otherwise, he'll keep doing the same thing, and he's going to keep winning the championship. He needs somebody that he's going to challenge him and Mercedes. You can't blame them, because it's easier if they've got one guy who's quicker than the other. I know Valtteri gets close in qualifying sometime that qualifies him, but race pace compared to Lewis this year, he's nowhere near him." End quote. So there you go. And of course, if you look further than the headline and you look further than the quotes, Jensen's basically summed up in a nice couple of sentences what I've gone on and kind of droned on about for the past several minutes. But I completely agree with them. And of course, Lewis is a completely different driver than when they were at McLaren all those years ago. I mean, Jensen was already a veteran driver by that time. Lewis, new to the sport, obviously very talented, but still an up-and-coming driver at that point. And of course, he's learned a lot since then. And why wouldn't he? I mean, he's raced in so many Grand Prix now. I don't even know off the top of my head how many races Lewis has actually competed in at this point. But interesting thought from Jensen Button, nonetheless. All right, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. And once again, I want to talk to you guys about MyBookie. You have late college ball, the NBA bubble, UFC Fight Island. It's clear that 2020 has been a year that is completely unlike any other. And that's why you need a sports book with offers unlike any other. So get some skin in the game today with MyBookie, where odds boosts, lightning deals, and free bets await all season long. And with Turkey Day right around the corner, there really is no better time to feast on some NFL action. So whether you're a first-time customer or have been playing with MyBookie for years, there is no shortage of value to be found in the thousands of game lines, unique prop bets, and contests that they offer each and every week. So sign up or get reloaded today, find an edge, make your bet, and get paid. MyBookie also boasts a fully-fledged casino platform, giving you access to all the classic table, slot, and card games you'd expect to find at your local spot. And the best part is, MyBookie, the doors never close, so you continue to build your bankroll even after the stadium lights have gone out. So make the right play and sign up today at MyBookie. And when you do, use my promo code OVERTIME to get your deposit matched halfway, all the way up to $1,000. The terms are simple. You put in $200, they'll match you with another $100 in your account. If you're already planning to bet this season, this is just free betting money. It's winning season at MyBookie, so come and join in all the fun and win some cash while you're at it at MyBookie. Once again, if you sign up, use promo code OVERTIME to get your deposit matched halfway, all the way up to $1,000. All right, well, welcome back to the show, and let's stick with Mercedes. There's a lot to talk about and break down some of the comments and some of the things we're just talking about. And Toto Wolff actually sought the advice from Alain Prost, who used to be a teammate all those years ago with Ayrton Senna, which I remember from way back in my childhood. And that's when I really first got into Formula One in the late 1980s. It really was quite amazing to see these two as teammates. And we all know some of the things, the famous moments that we saw coming together with Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton, Spa that one year, Spain, Austria. I mean, there's numerous examples. Anyways, Toto went and got the advice from Alain to try and avoid the what he called Senna-like rivalry issues within Mercedes. And of course, who else? I mean, Prost himself is a multiple world champion. And of course, the rivalry that he had with Ayrton Senna, if you're old enough to remember, it was pretty bitter and it was got pretty nasty as well. But that being said, after Ayrton was killed at Imola in 1994, Alain was one of the pallbearers at his funeral. But anyways, Toto said that he actually spoke to the four-time world champion after he took over at Mercedes, and he wanted to really find out what some of the issues and what some of the problems were that Prost had with Senna during their big rivalry years at McLaren in the late 80s. Anyways, Toto had to say, quote, "We have always been very transparent with each other. At the beginning of my stint with Mercedes, I remember a discussion with Alain Prost. I said to him, what went wrong between you and Senna? He said that sometimes we didn't know whether we had the support of the team or not. There was always politics involved. Now, I don't know if that is true because I was not a part of that, and certainly they had a great era. But we don't play politics. We play politics outside, but we don't play any politics inside. I would never permit it. Transparency, being honest with each other, blaming the problem and not the person, and empowering are the values that are the utmost importance to us. That's why it's a good place, a fun place, but also a pushing place," end quote. So, you know, that is very interesting. And I don't doubt that there was a lot of politics at play there's always politics at play in Formula One. I don't think it really matters what year it was, but I think especially back in the 1980s, it was a completely different world. Of course, this is more than 30 years ago now. hate to date myself and make myself like a sad old man, but I guess you can't hide from reality. But anyways, I think it is interesting that he did have this the discussion with Prost a number of years ago, and I think that it is interesting that that he comes out, Toto, that is, and said that that one of the things is that that Prost said was that neither himself or that Ayrton knew whether or not they had the support of the team back in the day. And that could very well be. I mean, if there is politics, maybe that's the way that they played it. Of course, that's in back of the heyday when Ron Dennis was the big man in charge at McLaren, and they had great cars back then. You look back at some of those beautiful, competitive, world-beating cars that they had: the MP44, the MP45, the MP46. I mean, absolutely. I mean, not only were they great cars, I mean, I just salivate every time. It's my heart starts to beat when I look at some of these cars. I mean, they're absolutely gorgeous. The MP44, fantastic car. The MP46, another beautiful car. But I could see that there might have been a level of paranoia, a lot of stress if you're Ayrton or if you're Alain and you're competitive, you're trying to beat that guy that's sitting across from you in the garage, and you know that guy's just he's quick. You probably think you're better, you're quicker than him, but the thing is that that's your rival, and just not knowing whether or not you had the full support of the team, I could see that that would really create an added level of stress and perhaps anxiety and paranoia as well. But I think it is very interesting the quote that Toto has to make about transparency, honesty, blaming the problem and not the person, and empowering are the values that are very important to Mercedes. And you can kind of really get that vibe, at least on the outside. And I don't think that that he's just paying lip service. I don't think that it is Toto just putting these things out there, and I don't think that it's fake news for lack of a better term. I think it's honest, because if you look at it, I mean, there's obviously an intensity and there is a commitment at Mercedes, but whenever they win, they look like they are always ecstatic. Everybody in that team, on the pit wall, in the garage, and you see the videos that they have when they go back to celebrate in the factory, in their offices, they don't look managed. It all seems very real, very genuine to me. And I think it really comes to a question of leadership. I think that you set these standards and you have the framework that that your organization operates in. You have these parameters. And I think it really is a trickle-down effect from above. And we've all had it in our own lives. I mean, I'm pretty sure most people who listen to this podcast who are like myself, and sadly, we've never worked in Formula One. But I mean, we've all had our share of good bosses and bad bosses, or we've been in a situation where we've been in, we've fallen somewhere in an organization, and we've all seen good and bad examples of the management, mismanagement, and good leadership and bad leadership. And I think it's very interesting that this quote in this story about Toto talking to Alain, and then also kind of taking the advice or the story that Alain and had to impart to him to give to him, and take that and in part apply it to what he's doing at Mercedes. So sticking with Mercedes, Toto says that he believes that everything has been done by the other teams to stop them. And he says that they're and this is ominous, because he says that the team is, what he says, quote, fired up to ensure that their dominance does not end in 2022. Because he said that he believes everything is done by the other nine teams in the Formula One paddock have been out there to stop them. And of course they have. I mean, I don't doubt that for a moment. I mean, we've seen teams come close. We all know that Red Bull's good for winning races here and there, but they've kind of been, third horse in that race. More recently, the second horse in that race. We've seen Ferrari decline over the past year and a half ago. And before that, sort of 2016 into 2017, definitely into 2018, Ferrari was much more evenly matched, a lot closer with Mercedes. You saw that at sort of the end of the Rosberg-Hamilton era at Mercedes. Into 2017, winning races, 2018, they had a definite shot to win both championships in that year, but of course that got away from it. And I'm not going to get into that one because we've talked about it a long time. But the thing is, I mean, everybody's been aiming at Mercedes, and it doesn't matter that's Formula One. It's the same thing. If you're the New England Patriots in the NFL, if you won all these championships, all these Super Bowls, of course everybody's going to be gunning for you. Same in the NBA, same in Major League Baseball. Any other sport in the world, if you're the top dog, everybody's going to come gunning for you at some point. And the thing is, Formula One is no different. But the thing is that even though that the other guys are out there to get Mercedes, they're always able to stay that much more further ahead of everyone else. And I think this year is just that perfect example is that you've seen that despite Mercedes, having obviously a very good car once again in the W11, you look at just down the road that you usually have Lewis, then you have Bottas, and occasionally that's reversed a little bit, but then you have Max clearly pushing that Red Bull beyond right to the limit of its capabilities. I mean, there's such a huge gap between Max Verstappen and his teammate. Of course, Ferrari's a bit of a non-factor at the moment. But then you look at the other teams, like your Renaults, your McLarens, the teams like that. They're sort of, and the Racing Points, they're all sort of just behind there. And then you've got Ferrari and everybody else, your Haases, your Alphas, and the other teams, Williams, all kind of down in that bottom third. But the thing is, with 2022 coming up, it really is going to change everything. We're going into the cost cap era. Probably we're going into a salary cap era for the drivers as well. I mean, so many things are changing. We're going to the different sized wheels and tires, a different formula. We've got new engine regs coming in 2026, but at least in 2022, it's going to be a completely clean slate for everyone. And it's going to be new cars, a whole new ball game, for lack of a better term. But the thing is, of course, there's going to be some change in the power structure in Formula One. Who's going to get it right? Who's going to get it wrong? Or let's put it this way, who's going to get it righter? If that's not even a word. But who's going to figure out the new regulations more to their own benefit than the other teams? And of course, based on recent history, you have to expect, it'd be a safe bet to put your money on Mercedes. Anyways, Toto had the following quote to say, and he said, next year will be a transitional year with the same machines. As I've said before, I expect Honda to give it a big push. And then obviously this big challenge of 2022 is on the doorstep that will motivate us. Everything has been done to stop us. We will all fight on a level playing field financially, and everything is pretty much capped. I'd like to see us continue to perform well, even though the most dramatic regulatory change that has ever happened in Formula One. End quote. And of course, he's nailed it, right? I mean, he's talking about all these things. And of course, if you have more money to spend, you can hire more people. You can invest more money in R&D. You can invest in a wind tunnel, all these, whatever it might be, to really try and get the most out of your team, out of your car and everything like that. But, regardless if we're going into, into this new cost cap year or not, it's one thing to have money, and it's one thing to throw money around, but it's also a question of how do you spend that money. It's one thing to go out there and just splash it out and hire a lot of people. You have to have a plan. You have to have a structure in place. You have to invest in the right people. You have to invest in the right equipment and the infrastructure and all these different things. And I think that even though obviously Mercedes have a lot of financial resources at their disposal compared to a Williams or a Haas or teams like that, that it just hasn't been money that's just sort of blindly thrown out there that they just have wildly spent money and gotten a very poor return on their investment. I mean, obviously they've done phenomenally well. And the thing is, I expect that to continue. I don't doubt that this new era that we're coming into in Formula One is going to shake things up, because there's going to be less money to play with. Everybody's got to fit within this new structure. But the thing is, it will reward teams, I think, more for their ingenuity and being able to do more with less, instead of having unlimited budgets to work with. And of course, there are certain loopholes and things like that, which I'm sure will come to light once we get into this cost cap era beyond 2021. And once it sort of settles into it, we'll really find out that, okay, they've got X number of dollars this year because it's going to be on a decreasing scale over the next couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see how they figure out some of these loopholes in the cost cap and things like that. But certainly, I still think that that your big teams, at least from the one thing I think will be in their, you know, in their benefit, if you're a Ferrari or a Mercedes or a Red Bull, one of these top teams, is I think that they're always going to be the kind of teams that will always attract the best, the cream of the crop. And I'm not saying that for that the other teams, that the people that work for them aren't as good quality. I'm not saying that at all, because they're all, if you're in Formula One, you're working in Formula One, you're obviously a very brilliant and very qualified person. The thing is, I think when it comes to teams like your Ferraris, your Mercedes, your Red Bulls, it's just based on who they are that, you know, the odds on that you're going to go to a winner is significantly, you know, increased. So I think that for lack of a better way of describing it, I think that they'll still have to, you know, that extra pull to get the, you know, the people that they need and the people that they want. And ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to in this new era is the workforce, the people that you have in your design offices, in your factories, you know, building and maintaining and designing these cars long before the drivers ever get into it. And it's going to be that human factor that I think that really will make a difference. Okay, so it's time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Please don't go away. I'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. So I want to move away from Mercedes now, which I talked about a lot more than I'd actually intended to. But Formula One is committed to the hybrid engines for 2026 and beyond. I mean, I still think, you know, at some point, the fossil fuel engines are going to disappear, right? I mean, we hear all these things. I mean, where I live in British Columbia, there's been some talk over the past couple of years that they'd like to see an electrification of you know, the vehicle fleet, you know, completed by 2040. I mean, there's a long way to go when it comes to road cars. I mean, where I live in this province is fairly small. I mean, we're, you know, population wise, we're only about 3 million people, and I mean, most of them live in Metro Vancouver and in the Fraser Valley. I mean, that's where the majority of the population is. So I mean, you compare that to like the big cities down in the States, your LAs, your New Yorks, and all these big metropolitan centers. be a lot easier for a place where I live to electrify a road fleet of cars, or mandate that to say bigger cities, more densely populated countries and things like that. But without a doubt, I mean, you certainly are seeing that. I mean, when I go out now, the amount of Teslas and Nissan Leafs and other electric cars that you see them all the time, but, and they increase each and every year. But the other thing is too, I mean, I can go out anytime now, and while I'm just driving what I call a normal car, a V6, but I sit at the lights, of course, I'm going to see a Tesla, but I see a lot of hybrid cars and powered cars. And I think that is, I think that, to me, that makes a real sense for Formula One to stick with that for the time being. I mean, these 1.5-liter V6 turbo hybrid eras, which they introduced back in 2014, are without a doubt engineering marvels. I mean, they are absolutely fantastic pieces of technology. And while one day I don't doubt that we will all be driving, electric cars or flying cars, like the Jetsons, I suppose, maybe one of these days, maybe not my lifetime, but I suppose that is the way that that the technology is going to go. I mean, I guess the big thing, of course, is the recent decision of Honda to pull out of Formula One at the end of next year really kind of kickstarted the need that they had to look at maybe some more radical ideas like electric or hydrogen engines when it comes to the new engine rules. But they've kind of pulled back that from away or from that side a little bit, and instead of they're kind of doubling down that they believe that a new generation of hybrid engines is the right way for Formula One to go. Because I mean, by the time we get to 2026, we'll have already had these V6 turbo hybrid engines for what, a dozen years at this point. And I've told this story a couple of times on the podcast before. When I went to the Spanish Grand Prix in 2014, that was the first time I've been into the race in a number of years. But of course, in person. And of course, the first thing I made sure I had when I showed up on Friday at Barcelona was to make sure I had my earplugs. But even going back to the very first race of the year, we got to Melbourne in 2014. I remember sitting down to watch qualify. I'm like, geez, these cars seem really quiet, but maybe it's just TV. And of course, we've all gotten used to it over the years. And but the thing is that even though it's really decreased on the decibel side and the loudness and the cool noise that we've always liked about Formula One cars, I mean, it hasn't led to any decrease in power. I mean, these cars get faster and faster all the time. And well, I mean, it's a combination of the engine and the aerodynamics and everything like that. I mean, it's not just the engine alone, but it is really, really amazing. So it does make sense that they want to stick with this for the time being. And Formula One released a statement, and they wanted to they went into a little bit more detail about sustainability and things like that. Anyways, I'll just read a couple of interesting quotes from the statement where they said, quote, "It is important that the most visual part of our sport is sustainable and can have real world benefits. We believe that with over 1 billion of the 1.1 billion vehicles in the world powered by internal combustion engines, we have the potential to lead the way in technologies that reduce automotive carbon emissions globally. We also believe that there is not a single solution to the engine technologies of the future, but that a sustainably fuel hybrid engine will be a significant moment for the sport and the automotive sector." End quote. Anyways, so what they've done is they've set up a working group of Formula One and FAA personnel to look into the future of engine technology based around sustainable fuels. So the statement went on to say, quote, "This group will be expanded to include specialists from the OEMs and energy suppliers, as well as seeking expertise from independent research groups," end quote. So there you go. I think it makes sense for Formula One at this point. And I don't want to knock Formula E. I mean, it is clearly electric cars are here. They're here to stay. And the way that the Formula E cars have come and they've developed, and you see the different generations of the cars in the short time that Formula series has been around, it's really impressive what they're doing, no doubt about it. But I mean, I guess at some point Formula One is going to face that issue. It's like, do they completely move away from internal combustion engines, regardless if they're hybrid or not? At some point, they're going to be faced with that decision. And I think that's going to be a question of when and not if. But, I mean, obviously, Formula One has looked into it, and they think at least in the short term, coming up to 2026, that it's right for them to renew this turbo hybrid, or sorry, these hybrid engines. And it's going to be fascinating to see what they come up with, you know, what these new engine regs are going to you know, look like. I mean, I'm really excited to see what the new cars are going to look like in 2022. But, you know, I also, you know, get kind of excited to see where this new era of Formula One engine technology is going to go. So certainly that's going to be one we need to take a look at and keep our eyes on over the months and years ahead of us. Okay, well, just looking ahead now, just to next season. So the Australian Grand Prix, the race organizers are working towards having people back in attendance for the Grand Prix that is scheduled for March in 2021. So, of course, without getting into to too much detail, it was called off, you know, this past year because it was basically when the first wave of COVID was really kind of hitting the Western countries. I mean, everybody showed up in Melbourne for the race. The media, the fans, the teams, everybody was there for ready to get to, you know, get going. And then, of course, the world changed and it hasn't been the same since, right? Anyways, you know, we've seen some people in attendance at races sporadically throughout the year. We didn't see any in Imola a couple of weeks ago. COVID's going to be here for a long time. Even after reliable and effective treatments and vaccines come out, it's going to be one of these things that it might be greatly reduced, but it's going to be sticking here for a long time. But I mean, the thing is, in Australia, they've done pretty good. But in other parts or parts of Australia, they're letting crowds of tens of thousands of people into stadiums for different sports and things like that. And the race organizers are working with health officials and the local government in the state of Victoria to find out what is practical and feasible for the race next year. Anyways, the CEO of the race organizers, Andrew Westacott, had to say, quote, "We are thrilled that the 2021 FIA Formula One World Championship will commence at its traditional home here in Melbourne. We continue to work closely with health authorities and the Victorian government as we develop our plans for fan attendance, which will be announced when finalized. We're adopting a sensible, adaptable, and flexible approach, ensuring that a safe environment for our fans and participants is our top priority. Our massive parkland venue with 10.6 kilometers of track frontage provides us with the perfect opportunity to create a COVID-safe venue," end quote. So we'll wait and see what, you know, how that actually plays out. But just kind of, you know, reading between the lines there and some, you know, just looking at what they're doing with other, you know, big events in Australia right now, I think that, you know, we could see a sizable crowd there if, you know, depending obviously what happens with the situation with COVID, obviously not just in Australia, but other places, because people will travel, you know, given that opportunity to go there, people will go. I mean, if things were okay right now, heck, I'd love to go and get on a plane. I mean, like many of you, I mean, I've been stuck close to home or at home for too long this year, and I think we're all getting eager to try and get out of this and get back to some sort of normal, but we'll wait and see. But just like I say, reading between those lines, I would expect to see a fairly sizable crowd there. Anyway, so just looking at the Formula One calendar has been released for next year. So we're looking right now at a 23 race season. So there's one race that is up in the air, and that's April 25th, the Vietnamese Grand Prix in Hanoi, which was going to be run this year for the first time, but was canceled because it was one of the early rounds in the championship this year, but was cut, not rescheduled because of a COVID. That's off, and that's disappointing. You know, the story's coming out, it's more internal politics rather than anything else. So that's kind of up in the air right now. So what we're looking at is starting at in Australia, March 21st, 2021, then going to Bahrain and China, which is pretty much what we see each and every year. like I say, the 25th of April is open. Then we go to Spain, Monaco, Azerbaijan, Canada, France, Austria, Britain, and Hungary for the first half of the season. That's pretty much the same as we see. Summer break will be at the beginning of August. The Hungaroring is set for August 1st. And then we go to Spa, Zandvoort in Holland, Italy, Russia, Singapore, Japan, USA, Mexico, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, and Abu Dhabi. So, you know, what with having Holland, which was going to be back on the schedule this year in the first third of the season, I think it was supposed to come right after Canada, if I remember correctly. So it was going to be about June. So they did ask to be pushed back later in the year because they felt that in 2021, if they went later, that that might be work out better in terms of you know, the COVID situation, because it's going to be the first race in Holland at Zandvoort since what, 1984, 1985, something like that. And of course, you got Max Mania in Holland, so they want to get as many orange-clad Dutchmen into Zandvoort, because I mean, that's going to be a party atmosphere. And I mean, Max is going to get about 100 extra horsepower for that race just from the fans alone. So they wanted to be pushed back. But I mean, it's pretty much your standard schedule, other than you know, at the end you've got this new night race at Jeddah in Saudi Arabia at the end of November, and then you get that pushes back Abu Dhabi Yas Marina Circuit to the weekend of December 5th, 2021. So interesting. I mean, it's we'll see what happens. I mean, otherwise we're going to get you know, hopefully they can fill something out there in that that open weekend between China and Barcelona. Otherwise, I mean, you know, if we got to go, we're racing at Shanghai on the weekend of April 11th, and they don't fill that slot on April 25th, then you're going to have a big break between Shanghai and Barcelona on May 9th. But I mean, what we've seen this year, I mean, there are plenty of contenders: Nürburgring, Portimao, Mugello, Imola. I mean, you know, take your pick. I mean, Turkey this weekend. And I would hope that, it, you know, just based on what we've seen this year, being able to cobble and scrounge a Formula One World Championship season together in, you know, in unprecedented and uncharted territory like we've been in since, you know, the early this year, that they would be able to get something sorted out. So I'm expecting that that weekend will be filled at some point. But the big question is when, and well, not when, but who and where. So definitely. Very cool to see that, you know, getting sorted out. So glad to see a lot of these ones there, but disappointing that we don't see a German Grand Prix on there. I mean, nothing at this moment at Hockenheim or at the Nürburgring. And to me, not having a Grand Prix in Germany just seems... it doesn't seem right. I mean, we saw the French Grand Prix disappear for a good number of years. And of course, we're back at Paul Ricard next year at the end of June, weekend of June 27th. But for me, I mean, Formula One isn't the same without a French Grand Prix either. I mean, it wouldn't be the same without Japan or Brazil, places like that. So interesting to see. And I suppose that this still needs to be ratified by the World Motorsport Council. But that's what we're looking at: 23 races in 2021. And I suppose that even if COVID is still a thing at that point, that we still will be able to get this done, because if we can get it done this year, 17 races, there's no reason why with enough planning it can't be done for next year as well. All right, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. Just a couple other housekeeping items before I get to some of the news coming up for the weekend ahead at the Intercity Istanbul Park for the Turkish Grand Prix. So Formula One is set for a single 3-day preseason test in 2021. And so basically what's going to happen is they're going to reduce this preseason testing to just 3 days for testing. And well, sadly, if this goes ahead, it won't be at Barcelona. That has been the traditional place at Circuit de Barcelona Catalunya. That's been the traditional testing home for winter testing for many years now. And they might go to the Middle East, to Bahrain instead. So, I mean, they have not had preseason testing there since 2014. 2017. That year they were the third and final test venue before the season, the inaugural season with the V6 turbo hybrid units were gone. So anyways, we will see what's happening with that, but could very much be a thing. So the W Series has secured 8 Formula One support slots for 2021, and I think that's pretty cool to see, because Formula One this year, what we've seen with in communities and around the world, just this whole discussion with racism and inclusivity and things like that, and this whole We Race is One, that seems a very proper thing to do. So I'm glad to see that W Series 8 support slots for Formula events next year. So the W Series CEO, Catherine Bonmuir, had to say, quote, "After such a successful inaugural season in 2019, we at W Series are absolutely delighted to be partnering with Formula One for 2021 and beyond. Formula One is by some margin the world's premier motorsport series, and when we promised that W Series would be bigger and better in the future, partnering with Formula One was always the ultimate objective. There is no doubt that now the W Series will be run alongside and in collaboration with Formula One, our global reach, impact, and influence will be increased significantly. Everything that made W Series so popular and successful in 2019 will remain. The cars will be identical, the racing will be close and competitive, and our mission will always be to further the interests and prospects of female racing drivers. We want W Series to entertain, and entertain it will," end quote. So there you go. Very cool. Glad to see that going, and 8 support slots for W Series next season. So one story that was going around a couple of months ago now was perhaps a new home for a Formula One race in Rio de Janeiro. That still seems like it's on the books, but Sao Paulo, the home of Interlagos, is going to keep the Brazilian Grand Prix there at least until 2025, with the race officials and local officials in Sao Paulo saying on Thursday this week that they're going to sign a new deal with Formula One to keep the Brazilian Grand Prix at Interlagos for a number of years yet. So it seems like a good idea. I mean, the big thing, of course, was the fact that to build this new track in Rio, that they'd have to cut down, there'd have to be a lot of clearing and cutting of trees and things like that. So that sparked a bit of a debate. So that sounds like if it's going to happen, it's going to take a while to get that all sorted out and done. Anyways, talking about some of the action on the track now, Lance Stroll says that he felt he was as safe as he could be when he passed very close to two track marshals at Imola, but he says that the incident must be addressed and dealt with. So he was asked about this incident from Imola just before the Turkish Grand Prix and the media day there. And so Lance explained that he had not been informed that the marshals were actually on the side of the track, but he backed off as soon as he could to keep it safe. So, I mean, backing off, he was still probably passing these two guys, these two track marshals, at a very high rate of speed. Anyways, Lance had to say, quote, "I hadn't been warned of them, no. I was given the message that lap cars were allowed to overtake the safety car and catch the back of the train, so I followed those instructions. I saw the marshal on the track, of course, and immediately lifted off and backed off and was safe as I could be in that section of the track. But I wasn't warned and I wasn't expecting to see anyone on the track once I got the message that I was allowed to overtake the safety car and to catch the back of the train. Thankfully, there was nothing bad that happened there, but for sure we'll have to address it and make sure something like that doesn't happen again," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, that is always safety has to be absolutely paramount and number one. And Sebastian Vettel actually said that he thinks it's what, in his own words, is, quote, embarrassing that Formula One drivers have to unlap themselves under the safety car. But the FIA went on to say that they say that there's an actual reason why they have to have this procedure. Anyways, Seb had to say the following, quote, "I think we should probably focus more on the solution. And I think that the reason we are physically unlapping ourselves is because we can't work out a software that actually just resets us. So we have to do the extra laps, which sounds quite embarrassing, but it's what I believe is the truth. So I guess going forward, we should probably just put some effort into the software that the lap cars are not forced to actually physically unlap themselves, but you can just reset the lap on screen and put them in the place that they are. So I think that would be the solution. Obviously, as a consequence. You had in the past people trying to catch the field, also in another other categories crashing, and then it can't be safe under the full course yellow to go out and crash. Plus, you've seen or witnessed in Imola people working on the side of the track, trying to do a favor for us, recovering the car that was stranded there, cleaning the track. I think they work in the contrary, these two things, and we should just focus on the solution, which I believe is purely software related. And given that it's 2020, I think it should be possible, end quote. Anyways, so an FAA spokesman actually said that the timing system doesn't actually have the ability to credit a driver for a lap that they haven't run, and then actually went on to clarify that such a requirement was has never actually been asked or stipulated. So they actually say that physically unlapping the cars is actually more of a, more of the reason and minimizes the possibility of somebody gaining an unfair advantage. So there you go. But I definitely agree that given that the year is 2020 and since we allegedly put men on the moon way back in 1969, that Sebastian Vettel is right. If they, why can't they do it software wise? That the cars can be unlapped that way and they don't gain an unfair advantage. Just sticking with a little bit more of the fallout, if you want to call it that, from Imola a couple of weeks ago. George Russell says he has no plans to change his approach despite crashing behind the safety car, which was obviously a big embarrassment for him. Anyways, George had the following to say, quote, following that mistake, it gave me a bit of time to think about the racing approach. I think racing sometimes rewards risk takers, but also sometimes rewards the more cautious approach. Last week, and most likely, I would have come away with a result had I taken the more cautious approach. But then it made me think, where do you draw the line? Do you be more cautious on your quali lap? Do you be more cautious with your setup? Do you be more cautious with the pit stop? We're all racers. We're all here, obviously, to push the boundaries. And doing that, mistakes will come along. It also made me think, should we fear mistakes? And I don't think we should. That is what I said to them in the letter. Do I regret what happened? Absolutely. But it will change my approach this weekend to moving forward? No, it won't. We are all here to push boundaries because we're all racers. And is what we do when we go racing, end quote. So there you go. I think that George, for a young guy, I think that's a very collected and a very mature sentiment to have. Anyways, Sergio Perez, yes, remember him. Yeah, he's out of a seat at the end of the year. Sergio very much prepared to take a year out of Formula One and not race in 2021 if he cannot find a suitable option to stay in stay with the team for next year. So I mean, there are some options out there. I mean, his name has been thrown out a couple of times, but obviously with Sebastian Vettel going to Racing Point / Aston Martin next year to partner up with Lance Stroll, that he's replacing Sergio, who's been there for quite a long time and has made that a little bit difficult for him. Okay, so just looking ahead now to the weekend ahead, Ferrari team principal, that is, Matteo Binotto is not going to be on the pit wall in Istanbul this weekend and is actually going to be helping to run the team from their headquarters back in Maranello. And he actually said not so long ago he planned to miss one or some of the remaining races in the season to see how, if it's actually practical or feasible to manage the team remotely. So that's, I guess that's a very 2020 thing of Mattia to do, with so many people doing the work from home thing nowadays or working remotely, at least part-time. It is, it's interesting, but obviously Formula One being a very hands-on sport is going to require people to be there in the garage, to be there in the car and to support the teams and the drivers and, do things like hospitality, for example, once we are allowed to congregate again. So of course, it's something they need to look into. And I can see that, there would be benefits for a team principal. I mean, to be able to stay back at headquarters. I mean, Toto Wolff has said, over the a couple of times recently how he would like to step back and not be able to or have to attend every race. So I mean, I can see, especially when you have 20 plus races a year, I mean, that's a lot of time on the road compared to a much less demanding time of being able to basically sleep in your own bed each and every night over the course of a race weekend and just focus on the time at hand. And I could see it being more productive as well. I mean, if you're going from Italy to Australia or to China or to North America or whatever it is, you're going to lose a substantial amount of time traveling to and from each one of those races. And that time spent traveling, you could obviously get a lot more productive work hours in, you know, in the office rather being, you know, in an aircraft, being in transit, sitting in an airport and all those fun things that happen when you're trying to get from A to B traveling. Anyways, acting Williams team principal Simon Roberts, pardon me, is going to miss the Turkish Grand Prix this weekend after he tested positive for COVID-19. Williams announced on Wednesday evening that Roberts had been retested earlier that day after showing minor symptoms for COVID. And this comes in the wake of actually producing a negative COVID test on Monday of this week. Anyways, the team confirmed that that despite Roberts having some COVID-like symptoms, he's otherwise in good health and good spirits. But obviously, he's not going to be able to travel. Anyways, the team said in a statement that Simon Roberts had not been in close contact with any other members of the race team. And the team is going to continue to operate trackside at the Turkish Grand Prix as they planned. And they've been taking part in the robust, what they call a robust testing plan, along alongside adhering to the the strict COVID guidelines that were laid down earlier this year. And we said, just talking now specifically about the race ahead, Max Verstappen said that he would rather that his head fall off through turn 8, or otherwise known as Diabolica, a little nod to Parabolica, but more ominous, obviously. So he said he'd rather have his head fall off through turn 8 at Istanbul rather than wearing neck padding for the brutal forces that the drivers are going to face in terms of G's going through that quadruple apex to corner. I mean, it is it's absolutely awesome. Really looking forward to see that. Anyways, it adds or it works out to be about 4 to 5 G's of load, which is the equivalent of the drivers having 45 to 50 kilos on their neck, which they have to try and sustain for 6 seconds as they go through that that very big corner. So that's going to be very physically demanding. Anyways, some of the drivers said they have the option of putting some extra padding into the cockpit to help rest their neck, but Max said that is just not an option, and he's not going to consider under any circumstances. And he says that part of it is that he got a lot of his dad Jos, another obviously a former Formula One driver, really gave him the gears after he used some padding in his first F3 tests. And he says he doesn't want to have to face that from his dad at any time in the future. Anyways, Max had to say, quote, "I remember my very first F3 test that I did. After one day I couldn't hold my neck straight, and then I had to put the padding in, and my dad was laughing at me for using that. Since that day, I refused to put padding next to my head. I prefer that my head falls off than run with padding, so it will be the same also this weekend," end quote. So there you go. Max going to tough it out through turn 8. Danny Ricciardo says that Renault has learned lessons from Portimao, which are really going to help them in Turkey this weekend. When it was asked about how they studied the data and how they could have taken a bit of a different approach on the setup at the Portuguese Grand Prix a couple of weekends ago, Danny Ricciardo said that this data could help help them have an advantage this weekend. Anyways, the Australian had to say, quote, "Whether it's the same or slightly different, I think there will be some similarities. When we left Portimao and digested it the following 72 hours after that weekend, there were some things we looked back on and said, yeah, we'll do that differently. If we had another chance, we'll change this. So we're taking this weekend as probably that chance to fix maybe a few little things that we did differently, and whether it turns out to be the same, time will tell. But I think we'll be coming in with a bit more optimism a few weeks ago," end quote. So there you go. I mean, it's been a challenging, a season for everyone. I mean, there's been some tracks that we've been to that we haven't been to for a very, very long time, or in some cases we haven't been to at all before. So I mean, it has been a real challenge. But I mean, obviously they see a lot of similarities between Istanbul and Portimao. Or Renault do that that way, because I mean they've been competitive in over the past several races, but in Portimao they weren't quite as competitive. And so we'll have to, like Danny Rick says, we'll have to take a look and see in a couple of days what happens, you know, over the course of this weekend, and whether or not Renault took those lessons from the Portuguese Grand Prix and applied them and learned from them and gained an advantage from them. So quickly, just before we go here, just want to give you the rundown on the track itself. So the Intercity Istanbul Park is 3.3 miles long, or 5.33 kilometers, 14 turns. The race lap record was set by Juan Pablo Montoya in a McLaren Mercedes way back in 2005, and that was a 124.770. So, I mean, it's been a good number of years since we've been there. I haven't been to Istanbul since 2011. First race was way back there in 2005, and just for fun, because it's not going to be too difficult to do so. Kimi Raikkonen won the inaugural Turkish Grand Prix in McLaren Mercedes way back in 2005. Felipe Massa is the most winningest driver in Turkey. Won it three times in a row from 2006 to 2008, driving a Ferrari. Button won there in 2009 in that memorable season that we saw with Braun. Lewis Hamilton won there in McLaren, driving McLaren Mercedes in 2010. And the most recent winner was number five himself, Sebastian Vettel, won there in 2011, and he was driving a Red Bull that year, of course. And if you go back and look at the very last race that we had in Turkey, on pole position was Sebastian Vettel in his Red Bull, and he set a time of a 125.049. And the podium back in 2011 was Vettel, his teammate Mark Webber, and then Fernando Alonso, third place in the Ferrari. The fastest lap of the race, the 2011 Turkish Grand Prix, was set by Mark Webber in the Red Bull Renault. And Webber's fastest lap that year was a 129.703. So there you go. Be interesting to see how that turns out on Sunday afternoon. So there you go. That's all I've got for this week. It's starting to get late here in the studio, so I'm going to wrap it up. It's been great to talk to Formula One. Thank you guys so very, very much for downloading and listening to the show. Got some big changes coming over the next little while here. Can't wait to share that with you guys. Very excited about what's coming for the program. And until then, love to hear all the messages and all the tweets and emails that I get from you guys. So please keep it up. And by all means, please send me a tweet at ScuderiaF1Pod. And if you want to get in touch via the email, please do so at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. Like I say, that's a wrap. Enjoy the Turkish Grand Prix. I'll be back on Sunday night to wrap that one up. And we'll talk to you guys then. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.